I'm gonna break. Forget the words on the right side of the screen. I have to start today's show with a follow-up from yesterday's discussion, Zach, because it went a little bit like I thought it would. I'm a little disappointed, and I need to address it. Here are some comments on yesterday's show.
Okay.
Zach wanting a baby blue helmet ruined my Monday.
I didn't even say that.
Navy
you said that.
Navy blue / burnt orange, period. Don't mess with our uniform colors. Shirts and hats can be as baby blue and orange as you want, but don't mess with the perfection that is the Auburn football team uniform. A couple more.
That wasn't the response you were expecting?
Navy blue is the right color. Ole Miss is baby blue.
There it is.
I agree to an extent, but give us orange jerseys. We had them in the 70s.
Reasonable. Reasonable take.
Ole Miss isn't baby blue. They're not. They're navy blue and red. And they thought it would look cool to do a baby blue version of their football jersey. And it does.
It worked. Yeah.
It does legitimately. That doesn't give them proprietorship over the color in perpetuity.
That's true.
Okay. And if Auburn wanted to do it, it would look hot as crap and would sell $1 million worth in every apparel store.
Yeah.
What's.
I mean, I can picture Alex Golish in a baby blue Auburn pullover. Right now, I don't even have to like think that hard. Like it's just there.
It's not a stretch. No. So, all right. I'm not, again, this isn't like a campaign for it. It's just, can we just think for a second before we knee jerk respond negatively to it? No, that's not our color.
But you're not surprised by that. Like you knew that would be the response, right?
I guess I should have known.
And I'm going to put this for the record, and I'm going to semi-throw part of Brad under the bus here, but
yeah, it's fine.
I was just wanted to talk about the culture of the Auburn fan base starting to grab it more, and Auburn's leaning into it.
Yeah.
Brad took an extra step of like, well, we should have baby blue jerseys. Like,
I did.
I was just saying, like, it's becoming more and more of like a normal, acceptable color throughout the fan base, which is true. Like, that is object. Like, that is 100% true.
And why is it okay for baseball but not okay for other sports? Why can't we? You know, Tennessee did this with their women's sports. Tennessee did that with their women's sports for a little while. They wanted a third color. This it's we're white and really light orange. So for women's sports, we're going to start throwing some baby blue in there, and they did, and it looked sharp. It complements well. Baby blue complements burnt orange and navy blue really well.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, all right, thanks. Needed to share a few comments from yesterday's show. The Ole Miss's baby blue one was like, we talked about that word for word on the show yesterday.
Sure.
They don't own it. They don't own the color. They made a really good marketing decision. They don't own it. Okay. Roster management. How many running backs are on the roster next year? How many quarterbacks are you paying, like, big money to be on the roster? Part of this stems from a discussion about Alabama signing another or getting a commitment from a five-star quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And predictably, the media narrative was, oh, Kalen DeBoer. Oh, my gosh. Look what Kalen DeBoer does with quarterbacks. And look at how they're flocking to get to him. And, all right, you can have a bunch of five-star quarterbacks on your roster. What are you paying those guys to not play? Is that wise roster management? I don't know. Maybe it is. What is wise? What is wise roster management at quarterback and running back? Let's start there.
Well, let me react to your Kalen DeBoer comment for a second. Like, the question about DeBoer has never been quarterback play.
Yeah.
It's can he manage a program that's as, you know, prestigious as Alabama, and can he have successful defenses? And I kind of think the jury's still out on both of those things. I don't think anybody was questioning his ability to call an offense. Like,
right.
Where did that come from?
Right.
Now, as far as the roster management, like, I do think using Alabama, Ohio State, Miami, Texas A&M, Oregon, I do think they're able to play a little bit different game than most college programs by
more money,
by the money aspect of it. So can they pay a Haven, five-star quarterback you're referring to, can they pay him, you know, 1.5 to sit freshman year? They probably can. Is it the smartest thing to do? Genuinely don't know. Don't know. Still early in the process. My gut says no, but we'll see. We'll see. And I don't know the year situation of Keelon Russell, but I'm pretty sure he's younger, right?
Yeah.
Like a redshirt sophomore or a true sophomore. I think he's a younger guy. So
younger half of his career. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, if he's not an NFL guy who's 3 and out, I mean, you're going to have to pay this kid, you know, 2 years before he even plays. So, I mean, he is the guy. Yeah. So just from a math standpoint, like, I think that's a pretty reasonable question to ask on your part. For an Auburn point of view, you know, we talked about this with Auburn. We were hoping for Auburn to get Will Mensel. And now that the smoke is cleared and Will Mensel picked Oregon over Auburn, and now we're looking at the timeline, it's like, man, really, it's next year's quarterback where the timing really does make sense. So does that mean you go and get a quarterback at all? Do you get a three-star guy who just wants to be here that you don't have to pay that much? Like, that opens up a different conversation. But to answer your original question of how many quarterbacks are on the roster next year that you're paying a ton, if Auburn doesn't get an elite guy in the high school ranks, which that's looking like an uphill battle, not impossible, but an uphill battle, I'm going to say one. And it's the guy that they bring in through the transfer portal. That's my guess, because I don't think Tristan Tia is going to have any leverage to ask for more money.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Doesn't mean he won't or can't be the starter next year.
Yeah.
But, you know, do you see enough of him in a backup role this year? And this is the question. Maybe it's too early to ask the question. I don't know. But you're probably wise to think about it now, because it's a pretty important position. Do you prefer to have Tia come on, run the offense as a backup this year, be your number two quarterback this year, know it in and out? Or do you prefer to go get a guy from somewhere else who has a couple of years of starting experience and transfers in? I get the sense that it's wiser to lean that way than on a younger player without starting experience. But I don't know how this staff views it. You know, Golish and Gordon they're loyal to the guys who know their system and they believe in them. So, I tend to think you look portal. Maybe they view it differently.
Well, if they viewed it differently, I think they would have done whatever it took to get Will Mensel.
Maybe, but are you turning over the keys to the offense to a true freshman next year? I don't think so.
No, you're not.
You're saying you go all in to get Mensel and let him sit behind Tia?
I think if you know you're not getting, if the plan's to not get a portal quarterback and to go all in on Tristan Tia, I think you also get Will Mensel.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I can buy that. Does that put you in the best place to succeed in 2027? Is that your best roster move for the 27 season?
I mean, probably not. Like,
yeah.
Does Auburn have a chance to get a quarterback in the portal that we think is better than Tristan Tia after this season? Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
I think so. Especially.
Well, there's a few variables to that, right? Like, we don't know how good Tristan Tia is going to be.
Right.
And we don't know who all is going to enter the portal.
Right.
But we're guessing. And I think quarterbacks who at least are more proven than Tristan Tia will enter the portal. But it also wouldn't shock me to see Alex Golish say, hey, we've been developing this guy and we believe in him and we're just going to take that extra money and buy offensive linemen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't hate that either.
Yeah. Well, that is the question about roster management is pumping the money into a backup quarterback who's not going to play, or because again, we talk about this with basketball rosters. You do it now with every roster. Basketball, baseball is the same way. You're building for that next year's team. You construct your roster with that year's, you know, rev share money and third party NIL for that year. So, yeah, do you spend a little less at the quarterback position as a whole and spend more on edge or on corner or on offensive tackle? Probably. Probably, I think. Matt, whether it's your starting quarterback or just, I'm talking about the whole position, the quarterback room as a whole, you may spend less there and spend more on the other positions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Plus, I also think there's an element of proof of concept, too. If Byron Brown goes out and just has a terrific year in this offense, well, now when you talk to a portal quarterback and you say, look at what this guy did in the offense, look at how it sets you up to succeed. Similar to running back recruiting like we discussed yesterday. You got all kind of examples of productive quarterbacks in the offense. It's an attractive spot to be in.
Let's stretch out that thought process for a second. So, you know, we're comparing a lot of this to what Tennessee has done and, you know, Hendon Hooker in this offense, you know, went absolutely nuclear.
Yep.
And I'm making sure I got my facts right on this. I think I do. So after Hendon Hooker was done, they didn't do that. They brought in their own guys, Joe Milton, right? Yeah. They recruited Joe Milton, I'm pretty sure. And then
I thought
Nico, I'm going to leave you. They also recruited, right? And that was kind of a big part of their thing. You could be the next Hendon Hooker. You can do what you did in this offense. And he did not do that. And then he left.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's the closest thing we have to compare it to, and that's not what they did.
Well, they did. They got Joe Milton from Michigan. They didn't recruit
Joe Milton was from Michigan. Gosh, I do not remember that. Did he play at Michigan?
I don't know. I'll have to go back and seek.
I mean, you're our resident Michigan truther.
I know, but man, no, he had 3 years of eligibility left.
Okay.
No, he was. So he started in 2020. So the 2020 season just flat out doesn't count in a lot of ways. He passed for 1,000 yards in 5 games, 4 touchdowns, 4 interceptions.
Okay. So guy showed a lot of traits.
Yeah. As a very young player, as a freshman.
Yeah. Okay. So is that what you do? I mean, that's not too different than Tristan Tia, right? It's just you get him, you know, before your first year, not after. Yeah. After you found some success, but
yeah,
he has a similar model
for sure. Yeah. And Tia would have a year in the system as a backup.
Yeah. So like, is Tristan Tia a better situation than Tennessee adding Joe Milton?
If that's 1v1, I probably lean Milton right now.
Even but with Tia having an extra year in the system?
I don't know.
How much is that worth? Because, like, yeah, Milton has better traits than Tia, no question.
Yeah, but it's not even just that. It's not even 1v1. It's if you're saving some money there and you can add a better offensive tackle or you can add a better guard or a better linebacker if you need to, like, whatever. Because of that, then that puts it over the top, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So sure. Right. I agree.
All right. Let us know your thoughts in the comments on that.
Hey, let us know your thoughts in the comments. Also, did y'all see how much Brad lit up when he remembered that Joe Milton went to Michigan? Did y'all see that smile? Did y'all see that glow?
No, look, I've been smiling ever since I went to see the Michael Jackson movie over the weekend.
I've heard people are saying how incredible it is.
It's a very good movie. I don't get people texting asking for movie reviews. I've gotten several since the weekend. So, yep, I would absolutely recommend going to see it. Now, it's not
people are texting you for movie reviews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How strongly do you feel about your ability to review a movie? Our sync is all people are going to think we're talking over each other. We're not. The sync on our internet is off. So we're not being rude, people. Promise.
Right. Okay. Then we'll try to figure that out because it doesn't seem out of sync to me. It just seems like you're being rude. No, I'm kidding. No, I trust it pretty well. I'm an okay movie reviewer, especially in this case, because I've been listening to his music for, I don't know, 43 years.
So the actor that played Michael, this is like his first movie, right?
Well, yeah, it's Michael's nephew.
Oh.
Yeah, it's Jafar
Jackson.
I've
seen some of the clips of people like putting the video or the movie next to like what actually happened.
Yeah.
It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah. It really, it's weird, in fact, because I've seen a couple of these, you know, music-based movies. Like we talked last week, Bohemian Rhapsody and the Bruce Springsteen one. And it's very clearly an actor, and it's not, you know, like, but this is almost too close. And so it's strange from that regard. Like, it's almost like an AI version of the real thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, and again, it's not a deep dive into a whole bunch of dramatic stuff other than his father was something, and kind of the beginnings of some of the pain medication stuff. But otherwise, man, it's just, it's music. It's how the music, it's the story of how the music came together and how he kind of became his own thing and broke away from the family name, and it's very entertaining. So,
cool.
Yeah, go see it. Go see roback.com. That's what you should also do. I'm wearing a Roback t-shirt today, as a matter of fact.
Are you really?
20, yeah. 20% off.
Stand up and let us see it.
How am I going to stand up? It's the
stand up now.
Yeah, no.
Stand up now.
No, because you'll take the graphic away.
You're right.
I know you. Roback.com, R-H-O-B-A-C-K, 20% off everything. That's the hoodies, the polos, the shorts, the t-shirts, the accessories, the hats, all of it at Roback.com. Use promo code BARN20, BARN20. And you get 20% off everything at roback.com. Auburn baseball has 11 games left in the regular season. I wear an Auburn Roback shirt sometimes on the broadcast that you can see on YouTube. They have 11 games left in the regular season.
Yeah.
Eight of them are on the road. Auburn's fifth in the standings right now. And the teams they play down the stretch, the three teams they play down the stretch are three of the four teams ahead of them in the SEC standings.
Yeah.
So, a chance for movement for sure, but it's like by far the toughest stretch anybody plays in the country to finish the regular season.
Yeah. But the beauty of it is it's not going to hurt them regardless of how, I mean, unless they go like 2-9, that would not be good. But as long as it's serviceable, it's not going to hurt you. I think it's a situation where it can only help you realistically. Hypothetically, no, but realistically, it can only help you. So that's good. You know, and what that number is like 15 or 16 SEC wins you're probably hosting.
Yep.
You know, can Auburn find four? If they can go 4-5 over their last 9 SEC games, they're probably hosting. And potentially hosting a super.
That's the thing. Yeah, the only reason to question whether or not that's enough to host a super is to get because of the teams ahead of them. If you go 4-5 down the stretch, all right, let's say that you get 1 out of 3 at Texas A&M, 1 out of 3 at Mississippi State, and then 2 out of 3 at home against Georgia. That's a pretty big exclamation mark to close the regular season if you beat Georgia 2 out of 3. But if you win 1 out of the others, that bolsters their case for hosting. Like these are all the teams you're competing with for a top 8.
Right.
You know, you're competing with Texas and you drop 2 out of 3 to them. You're competing with Mississippi State, Texas A&M, and Georgia. So if you lose those series, it gives them ammunition to, you know, for them to get that national seed over Auburn. If it's instead of and, then you give them ammunition. But
right. We've also seen Auburn and most SEC schools when it comes to the final seeding, not the projections, you know, not what D1 baseball says, but the actual like field.
Yeah.
A big takeaway that people typically write about over the last few years is Auburn got seeded too high. Like they were gifted, you know, higher than what they predict. And this is coming from the outlet that underranks Auburn compared to every other poll pretty consistently.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting business model that I would love to discuss at some point, but we don't have to today. But the aspect of, okay, like the committee that puts the postseason field together,
yeah,
they put all the SEC teams higher. as a general rule. And so you're seeing a lot of folks say Auburn's 9. There's a shot Auburn gets in to that top 8.
Yeah. Yeah, well, for sure. And 16 wins in this conference this year with the toughest strength of schedule. It's like the opposite of the basketball issue. It's like you have one enough. You have to reward the schedule and a better than 500 conference record. I mean, even the non-conference, you're going to play Birmingham. You're going to play UAB in Birmingham. They're a top 35 RPI team. And you're going to play at Jacksonville State. Nobody else.
UAB's top 35 RPI?
Yes.
Good for UAB. That's awesome.
And so is Jacksonville State. You don't play a game,
right?
Huh?
Did they beat us earlier in the year?
Yeah, they did. Okay. Significantly. It was kind of the beginning of the turnaround for this. Like, since then, they've won 4 straight series overall, but the offense, really the last 3 weekends, has shown you a whole lot more, and that was since the Jack State game here.
Yeah.
But you go to their place, they're a top 35 RPI team. The SEC series left are top 10 RPI teams. I mean, it's just... But my point in saying all that isn't to build the excuse in if they don't win. It's to say they're in a really good spot right now. They had 4 guys hit better than 430, I think, last week in 4 games last week. And one of those is, you know, like 2 of those are Chase Frelick and Bub Terrell, left-handed hitters who you need to be at the top of their game offensively to go a long way in the postseason.
Yeah.
So I really like where this team is offensively.
Yeah. I mean, especially with what you saw Sunday, right? Like, get to game 3. Get to game 3. Make game 3 a rubber match. Auburn's going to have more pitching depth. Yeah. I mean, even with these teams that are coming up, like, yeah, I feel good about all that. I mean, especially like a Georgia that you end the season with. If you can get to game 3 and it's close.
Yep.
You know, you got to like the depth of Auburn's pitching more than Georgia's. Now, Georgia's going to hit the stew out of that thing.
Yep.
So you got to get to that point. But yeah, I think you could say the same with Texas A&M as well. Like, I think Auburn's pitching depth as a whole is better. So they just got to get to that game 3.
I don't remember a year where Auburn had 4 bona fide SEC starters for 3 weekend games. Because Alvarez, Marciano, Sanders, and Petrovic are all bona fide SEC starters. They've shown it. We're now going into the 8th series of the year. This isn't prospecting. This is, I've got a whole season full of evidence. We've seen 11 weekends now out of these guys. They're bona fide SEC starters, and you got 4 of them for 3 games.
It's going to be huge when it comes to regional and super regionals, just because nobody else has that. Curious to see if they keep Jackson Sanders in as the guy after Alvarez on Friday nights.
Right.
I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, how that works. And, you know, Auburn had a slight lead against A&M when he came in. Like, do they use him if they're down 2 in that scenario? Like, that's one of the games within the game that I'm looking forward to seeing play out.
Yeah, it's kind of the opposite of Saturday. Friday against Florida. Because game 1 against Florida, they were down, and they didn't use him to follow Alvarez because they were down. Saturday, he followed game 2 against Florida, he followed Marciano instead of Alvarez because, you know, they were right there.
So. What an asset to have. Yeah. And look, some of these other guys that are probably going to have much larger roles next year, you're starting to see them emerge, which isn't unusual for Butch Thompson teams. Yeah. Is usually there's another guy that kind of comes out of the bullpen that emerges. Is it a Chatterton? Is it a Cormier? Right. I mean, you feel good about both of those guys going for 3 innings if you need them.
Cormier has been a stud this year. Freshman.
He is that guy.
He's
going to be so good.
He just keeps getting better. Keeps getting better and so poised. He's maybe thrown his best 2 outings, his last 2.
And it looks like he just enjoys every second of it. He enjoys the pressure. He enjoys the people cheering for him or against him. Like, he loves it. And that's just the kind of guy that you want.
Can I tell you who's come out of nowhere too the last few weeks? Abe Chancellor.
Sure.
Abe Chancellor, redshirt senior out of Dothan, left-hander who, you know, pitched a handful of times last year, but quite frankly, and Abe would tell you this, they were games that were out of hand one way or the other. Games weren't hanging in the balance. Well, now he's come out, and in the last several weeks, he's gotten in several times. He's pitched great. Him being able to throw an inning or so at the end of game two meant they didn't have to bring in Hetzler in a close game, which meant Hetzler could come in and pitch three innings to close out. Well, it wound up being two because of the run rule, but they were going to pitch him three innings to close the game Sunday. Abe Chancellor is becoming maybe that guy, a bona fide part of the bullpen plan down the stretch. It's awesome to see.
Yeah. So great work by this team. Just gets tougher, though. So we'll see how they handle it.
And they're not home again to the middle of May. It's just the next eight on the road, starting this weekend at Texas A&M. And by the way, these next two weekends,
four and four over that, I'd honestly probably take it.
That'd be tremendous. Yeah, I think that would be an awesome set for this team. Now that, you know, they want to do better than that. But realistically, if you go that, you're in
they go five and three over the next eight at home.
Yeah,
they're hosting.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. So go 4-4 on the road and then get 2 or 3 from Georgia at home, and you close that 11-game set 6-5. Yeah, you're a top eight national seed.
100%.
No question. All right.
That does it for today's show.
Thanks, everybody, for watching, listening. Please subscribe on our way to 13,000. Thank you so much for that. Remember, until next time, everyone has vices. Make sure Village Vice is one of yours.